Welcome to The Endless Spiral. I am your host, Keith Russell, and this is a podcast dedicated to unraveling the intricate threads of mental health, exploring the profound depths of the human mind, and shedding light on the often turbulent journey towards well-being. In each episode, we'll delve into a diverse array of topics surrounding mental health and eating disorders. Join me as I chat to experts in our chosen fields, as well as individuals with lived experiences. We'll explore the multifaceted nature of mental health, while hopefully dismantling stigmas along the way. In this episode, I'm delighted to say that we are joined by best-selling author Caroline Foran. Caroline is the author of books like Owning It, Confidence Kit, and Naked. She is also the host of her very popular podcast, also called Owning It. In this episode, we chatted about all things anxiety, Caroline's own story, parenthood, triggers, and much more. I hope you enjoy this episode. Please don't forget to like and subscribe to wherever you get your podcasts from. Now, Caroline, thank you so much for giving up your time to come on and chat to me on the podcast today. I really do appreciate it. I know you're up to your eyes, and we were just chatting about you've got like little disruptions that might happen. So I do appreciate you kind of giving up your time to chat to me today. But how are you anyway?
Thanks for having me. And it's always so nice to take a moment and like reflect. And I think, you know, the more conversations that are had about anxiety, the better, because we're all feeling it in some way. And sorry, I cut across there. Were you asking me how I am?
Yeah.
So when people ask this question, like socially, and everyone says, oh, grand. Mm. I am so not the kind of person who can say that. I'm like, do you really want to know? Because I'll sit down there and I'll tell you, I just can't say fine if I'm not fine.
Yeah, me too.
I just can't, because it just feels so, I'm like, I'm lying. So I'm not great at the moment. We are really in the thick of it with our little boy, who is 3.5. He'll be 4 in August. And he actually, for whatever reason, is carrying an awful lot of anxiety himself, which is coming out in all kinds of behavioral challenges. And just getting through the day with him is very, 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 very tricky. And even separate to my own sensitivities or my own, you know, tendency towards anxiety, I think anyone would find it really draining, and that your resilience would just be kind of pummeled eventually. It's just, we're kind of in the thick of it. So it's hard for me to derive any kind of enjoyment out of other things, because I'm kind of walking on eggshells all the time. And but in saying that, you know, it's taken me so far away from my own worries. Like I don't have time or space to ruminate on, you know, existential anxiety worries that I might have had before. Like wherever there's a space in my head, anxiety would have rushed in to fill and like give me something to worry about. But at the moment, it's so taken up with worries for my son and getting through the day with him and, you know, just trying to figure all that out, that it's kind of like swapped one anxiety for another in a way. It's very efficient.
Yeah, I mean, and I wouldn't mind. I was going to chat to you about parenting anyway, and we can come back to it later on anyway. But like, it's funny because you say that, because I feel exactly the same at the moment, and I'm kind of one of them as well. As like, I suppose before I would have done the opposite, where I would have been like, I'm fine, I'm grand, as in like I hid all my stuff away for a long, long time anyway. So you kind of just get used to saying that. But at the moment, I'm not fine either. And it's funny, we're doing an episode about anxiety today, because my anxiety at the moment is actually quite bad. And I could even hear it in my voice at the moment. And I was kind of just looking in the mirror before we started this, and I can see it in my eyes. I actually can see it. I can see the tiredness, and I can see the emotion in my eyes at the moment. So I can completely understand where you're coming from with not really being able to, or not even wanting to say you're okay when you're not.
It's hard for people to, I think socially we're more comfortable with people saying they're fine. You know, obviously, like if you meet someone in a supermarket, you're not going to be like, come here and I'll tell you the full story. But I still think it's perhaps an Irish thing or a stigma thing of, you know, we really praise people when they go through things quietly, which is so like dangerous, I think, in a way. You know, we say like, oh, she never complains, or she just takes it all in her stride. It's like, well, I really want to move away from that. And like, if it means that people think I'm complaining or negative, then like, I don't care, because I can't put out one version of myself and be living another, because I think I just kind of explode. So yeah, I know, like, it's, and why do you think the anxiety is so much for you right now?
My kind of family situation changed a while ago, and I've just got external stress at the moment then. But also, as you said about your kid and his anxiety, I've got a child who's kind of quite bad with anxiety as well, and that's been a bit of a trigger for me as well. And she said something to me the other day that kind of just triggered me, and I started to really think about myself. And you kind of become very aware of what to say and what not to say to kids. And I've been doing my best to be very kind of empathetic to her and understanding to her, because she's quite similar to me in her personality. And she just said something to me the other day. I won't go into too much detail here because it wouldn't be fair, but it was something that I've kind of, if anyone's familiar with kind of what I talk about and my own story, it was just something she said, and it kind of made me kind of feel that maybe I'm partly responsible, or maybe she has seen some interviews I do or something, that it just made me really kind of think about things. And I was already kind of feeling a bit anxious anyway, just about kind of external stuff, but that really triggered me now. Excuse me, I can actually feel it, can hear it in my voice at the moment. That really upset me.
Oh, I'm
And
so sorry.
but like, yeah, thanks. And it's like, but it's, I suppose I'm exactly like you. I can't just say I'm okay when I'm not. But I suppose the people who understand you and the people who are close to you will understand. As you say, you're not going to meet someone in the supermarket and go, "Well, wait till I tell you." But obviously, the people who are close to you and the people who know you best, you shouldn't really need to, I suppose, put on a brave face when you're not. I mean, I know you did it for a long time, kind of just hiding things away, and I did it as well. And I just, like, I actually find it more draining and emotionally exhausting doing that than actually just saying to someone, "You know what? I'm actually not really great at the moment."
Especially with anxiety, like, it's one of the worst things you can do. It's like caging in like a monkey who's just needs to run wild, and you pretending like it's not there, and it's like banging around. It's whatever about other, maybe other kind of emotional struggles. I think anxiety will, like, anxiety begets anxiety if you don't sort of say, like, the first port of call for me whenever I feel a bit of a wave of it, and one of the, the first things I learned with having the extent of anxiety that I had many years ago was just having to say it like the way you'd say it's raining today. It's like, yeah, I'm like anxiety, it's with me, or this, my friend always describes it to me as like it's just energy passing through, which helps me detach it from being me and my fault and my personality. So I just sort of have to say, yeah, I'm just having a bit of an anxious wave at the moment, and like I know that I'll come out the other side. But if I once I say that, and say that to whether it's my husband or a friend who I'm meeting for coffee, or like only last November, I, for whatever reason, just started to kind of feel it again. And I had to go on a work trip, and I was worried. It was just me and a friend going on a kind of freelance work trip. And I just had to say it to her. I was like, look, I'm like, I'm going to be there, and I'll be fine, but like, I'm feeling this and just need the, I just wanted it to be okay. And she's like, yeah, Grant, like, if you want to take time out, if you want to have a nap, if you want to, like, let's just make it work. And that makes me cope so much better. Like, that is probably the ultimate coping mechanism in a way, to own it and to kind of name it and say, yeah, I have it with me. It's coming on the plane. I have a seat for it on the plane beside me, and or it's coming with me to work today, and that's okay. I don't need to get rid of it, but it's there. And having no qualms about saying it to anyone, because it's such a normal thing.
The energy passing through you is actually quite a good one. I like that. I know you mentioned not owning it, and obviously we will talk about your podcast and your books as well, because obviously it's important to talk about them. But I think around when he said, I changed careers, and I remember it was a few jobs into changing the career, and I had a really bad, I think my anxiety really, I was diagnosed with generalized anxiety disorder in 2016, and it was really, really bad. And I didn't know what, you feel overwhelmed and lost and confused, and you're going to therapy and all. But your podcast, I came across your owning a podcast, And it was the very first podcast I listened to for kind of trying to understand what the anxiety was. And I remember listening to the first few episodes that you did. I have to go back to the start, and I started the very first episode, and there's so much that you talked about regrets and triggers and your job and how your job was maybe triggered it, but it wasn't the cause of it. And I remember those so much that I could relate to it. And then what are we now, so many years later, actually getting to chat to you about it. But like, obviously you weren't always didn't always have a podcast, and you weren't always a best-selling author, which I know we'll talk about that as well. But I know I've seen you talk about like before when you were a child, and you know, you're just not having the language to understand what the pains in your tummy were. And this is what reason why I'm saying that is because my girl who I was telling you about a few minutes ago, she does exactly the same as what you did, and she's always
What age
saying
is she?
about pains in her tummy. She's 10 now, but she's been like that for quite a while, and she mentions the pains in her tummy quite a lot, and obviously doesn't know how to kind of articulate it because she doesn't understand it.
But the main thing is, I mean, she's very lucky to have you as a parent because, like, the fact that you can even see that. Whereas, like, when I was that age and, back in the 90s, like, there wasn't like an iota of awareness of the link between mental health. It was just like there must be something upsetting her tummy, or her tummy is just like sensitive, or she's just a bit of a nervous ninny. And it was never, I had a parent who could kind of connect those dots and help me start to piece it together, especially when she's of an age where she can kind of grasp that. It will be so invaluable to her. And even just for you to be able to recognize that for what it is, like it's probably not a food intolerance. It could be, but it's probably anxiety manifesting in that way. And there's probably a lot of reasons, for why kids feel anxious, which to adults seem so trivial. And that's what I kind of talk about my story, and I go back, I feel kind of silly sometimes because like nothing really happened. There's no trauma, there's no big moment that was like, oh, okay, that's why she was such an anxious kid or grew up to be such an anxious person. I just think some people have much more like opaque skin or something, like it's just things can just absorb in a bit more. We can feel things more, highly sensitive people. I also think that, I mean, I'm really appreciated learning about this idea of the window of tolerance, which we are all born with. And I think of it like a game of operation, that game, and you'd be like moving the thing around the body, and you'd have to try and not touch it off the sides. And if it touched off the sides, the alarm would go off. And I feel so that's kind of how I explain the window of tolerance. For some people, the space they have to move in through the game of operation is much wider, and they have loads of flexibility. They can do loads of things and handle loads of stressors before they'll knock off something and get an alarm. Whereas people like maybe you or I, or certainly my son, it's so narrow and it takes so little to just whack off the edge of the window and you're popped out of it. And then it's your fight or flight response triggered, your nervous system activated. And I think with that in mind, if you kind of look at people coming into the world with this temperament or this makeup, this circuitry, it helps to take it away from, well, what happened, what was the reason, because it doesn't necessarily need to be a big reason, it's just your disposition. There are definitely things that happen along the way, for me anyway, as a kid, that I can remember, like core memories that locked in that time frame between being able to have like a strong fear response but your brain not yet being able to rationalize it. And that's kind of between like 6 or 7 and 11. So your daughter's like right in the middle of that right now. And so things that happen then can like really weigh on you, but your brain's not there yet to be able to separate or distinguish it from, something that's worth worrying about and something that's okay. So they're really, really fragile formative years. And some kids kind of might sail through it and then hit a rock at some point. But I, in a way, I think I'm kind of glad now that I was that way when I was younger, because it made me have to really learn and develop the skills. And I think a lot of people, we all kind of hit it at some point. And a lot of people who sail through their youth and their teenage years as an adult then might start to feel, an overwhelming amount of stress for whatever reason. season and like have no clue where to begin and no clue what's going on or why it's going on. So it's kind of just getting your mental health education in early.
Yeah. Did you find it very frustrating that you couldn't kind of maybe articulate it or have the knowledge? So you started, you were always kind of feeling a bit anxious, or obviously you didn't know you were
Well,
living with it, but.
yeah, no, I think the I definitely I've got memories of a child of being like I just never felt well and being like left in my grandparents' house and being like and like now I can see that it was when I feel unwell is when I didn't feel comfortable or when I
Right.
really, missed my mom or I just wanted that comfort factor. And so I can see that now like really clearly and I wasn't like abandoned by my parents, but just as it happens, parents are working and blah, blah, blah. I think I probably just needed a little bit more like mommy time. But then as a teenager, I went away one summer. I went to Italy. I'd been like pretty okay for my first few years of school. Like there wasn't a bother on me and I was doing well. Like socially, I was doing great. No one ever would have thought that I was the person in the class who was struggling. And after fourth year, transition year, I went on a holiday with two of my friends and one of the friends' families. And it was like night and day. I just arrived there and we arrived at night in Italy and I just had this little kind of sense of uneasiness of like, so I was 16, and just having this feeling of I kind of want to be at home and oh, I wish my mom was here and feeling just like I'd been plucked out and I didn't recognize anywhere. There wasn't really anyone who I was super comfortable with. And that night I started to feel really, really unwell in my tummy. And I convinced myself that I and I convinced everyone else was convinced that I had some sort of bug and it would just go away. And I was stuck there for 2 weeks and I got so ill, but also so frightened of leaving the house in case I was unwell. I lost, like, I came back like a rake, like, I lost so much weight. And I remember my mom just being like, there must be something, you must have caught something. And, when you come home, it'll be okay. And I just had this feeling of, no, I don't think so. Like, I don't think, I've never heard of a bug lasting like this long. And I've met, I don't think something's not right with me. And I knew when I got home and I still wasn't feeling okay. And then it just, I think I knew on some level. But I didn't have the awareness and I didn't think I had any reason to be anxious. But now the anxiety was explained to, I could explain it as, well, I'm anxious because I don't want to be unwell. So I don't want to go anywhere. I don't want to go out. I don't want to go away. I don't
Right.
want to be away from home. I want to be, that makes sense, So from 16 on, it was just, and all through college when everyone is, going as far away from their parents as possible, going on trips. And I was like, so afraid to be like, no, I don't want to. I don't want to because it felt like social suicide to be
Yeah.
just, I felt like a sap. Like, I was frightened of everything. And I knew that whenever I felt unwell, like I wouldn't necessarily feel unwell if I was at home with my mom watching telly. But if she said right now, like, I remember one time having a very visceral panic attack, but it was like a tummy attack almost when there was a house party and I was like, oh God. And in my head, I'm looking for any reason not to go. And I was like, come on, like mom and dad will drop you. And as soon as they dropped me and it was this house party and everyone was, having a great time. And I was just like, I couldn't cope being there. And I started to get sick. And then before my parents had even gotten back home, I rang them, I was like, you have to come back and get me. And I felt like such a failure and such a weirdo. And all my friends were like, what's wrong with you? Like, what is it that's making you sick? And what is, I certainly felt like the only person in the entire year who was going through that. And then, through college, like friends planning J1s, and I would like go and get myself a job here so that I had an excuse to stay because I couldn't bear the thought of being that far away from home. And I think it started probably as anxiety manifesting in my tummy, but then like t then if you weren't unwell, of course you'd be anxious. So it became like a chicken and egg situation. And I couldn't separate the two.
Exactly the phrase I was had in my head when you were talking there.
Yeah, and then
Yeah.
also, when I was 20, I learned that I actually did have like lactose intolerance, which
Okay.
was such a relief to me, because all I wanted, like when I was in school, all I wanted, I was in hospital, I was like loads of different tests. I missed pretty much all of my 5th year of school. All I wanted was for someone to say, this is what it is, let's fix this and then you'll be fine. And I just never ever came to that conclusion. But then when I realized that I was lactose intolerant, and the doctor who kind of helped me figure that out, and it was very, very, very complicated, and it was a really hard thing to arrive at, because intolerance testing is like not easy at all.
My
It's not a
son has it as well. He's protein intolerant, so I've gone through the exact same stuff with him.
oh, it's awful. But he could say to me, well, you don't have the lactase enzyme to break down lactose, so when you put lactose into your body, it makes you sick. And I was like, oh my God. So all this time, I also do think it's important to say that we always potentially give anxiety nowadays too much of the blame, when there might actually be something else going on. And if something is making you unwell, of course it's going to make you feel anxious. So it's really important to address it from both sides. Now, for me, even if it was a lactose thing, it became a behavioral thing. It became a mental health thing anyway. So just because I took away the lactose didn't take away my anxiety, but it helped me feel a bit like there was something I could grasp and start to be like, it's not just that I'm like a complete disaster of a human being, because that's how I felt. I just felt like, I always said it to my mom, like I was like, I just feel like I'm broken in some way, or there's something missing, or I don't have the same kind of protective shield that other people have. And I just can't go about myself in the world the way other people can with such ease. And I felt so different and depressed, really, as a result of all the anxiety. And that was all well before I got a grasp on things, or even experienced the anxiety that made me have to confront it, which is what I talked about in the books and stuff and the podcast. So I kind of had periods of being like okay again, and then I'd get pulled back into it. And then the last time when it happened, when I was in my 20s, when you were mentioning the job and stuff, at that point it came back into like a lot of my it manifested in my gut again. But this time I just was like, I don't think this is so coincidental. It's too much of a coincidence not to be a mental health thing. And this is obviously just how it shows up for me. But even then, like this was 2014, I still had doctors being like looking at me like I had two heads. I was given like all different kinds of stuff to like for like my tummy, when there was nothing wrong. Like there was nothing wrong with my stomach. It was all anxiety, because I wasn't having any of the dairy or anything. And that's when it was like, I always describe it as anxiety is always communicated to me through my tummy. And at this point, it was like, she's not getting the message. We have to turn up the volume, bang the door down. And then they threw in like really severe like panic attacks and stuff. And then it was like so weird, because then all my tummy troubles stopped, all my tummy issues kind of just went away. And I was just left like riddled with anxiety. And it was so weird. It was literally like a communication system happening in my body. And no longer, it didn't have to go through the guise of my tummy anymore. I was like, I get it now, I hear you. And it was just like, we are not okay, this is not good. We know this is not going to be something we figure out overnight. This is not something you can flick a switch for. Quitting the job didn't make it all go away. It was like I had unraveled to such an extent, and I had years of anxiety to process and to figure out. And yeah, this is 10 years later now.
Yeah, it's the lack of control as well, isn't it? You're saying about, when you hear, when you the lactose intolerance, and it's like you do want just something to make you feel a bit validated in a way, isn't it? So you can kind of try and understand. Obviously, you still had the anxiety because it didn't go away, and I was exactly the same. But I think the work thing is kind of interesting, the fact that it brought it back again, isn't it? Did you have a trip or something, or you? Was it a trip at work, or was it just the fact
No,
that?
I left. I was in a job that I was doing really well. Like I really did. Anxiety was kind of in the background for me, at that time. And I'd worked my way up to be like the editor of the whole editorial team, and I was really, really thriving. And considering where I had come from, I was doing great. And then I think I just got a bit sort of carried away with this idea that like you can't ever let yourself stay in one place for too long. I can't settle, because you'll get stale, or if you're not being challenged, this like toxic work idea that like you have to be pushing, pushing, pushing. Like looking back now, I was like, Jesus, you were so, could you not have just enjoyed that for a while? Like you're so young, there's plenty of time to do other things. And I, had everything had changed. I also moved out of my family home at the same time and in with my boyfriend, and it was just a lot for someone as sensitive as me. Those things that would have been super exciting maybe to someone else were like, it was too much like tectonic shifting, and I fell through the cracks.
You kind of just catastrophize everything in your head as well, don't you? And it's like you're just kind of saying, like, why couldn't I just enjoy those things? Do you have any other regrets? Or you don't mean you have to list them, but do you have regrets from when you were growing up? Like, I know you talked about kind of not going away and stuff and traveling.
I don't regret not going away because I know I wouldn't been able for it at the time. Like, I'm actually proud of myself for being, I guess, brave enough to like lose out on the social element for the sake of my mental health. Like, if I was so worried about keeping up with my peers, I could have found myself on the other side of America. And, I can't imagine what kind of state I would have been in because nobody would have understood it. And if I was doing that just to prove something, so I don't have regrets about it. I'm not doing any of those things. I'm sad about it that I'd missed out on a lot of experiences. But I kind of forgive myself for that. I was obviously just what I had to do to cope. And yeah, so I don't really have any regrets with that way. I mean, I regret that, like, sometimes I regret that I made that job change, but it would have come at me at another point in some other form. It was probably bubbling under the surface. And obviously, like, I don't regret where it's brought me in my career, but I it's not something I would like want to go through for the sake of the work that I do now necessarily. Like, it was so, I was not okay for a very long time, and I was extremely low and like concerningly low, and it was no quality of life, and I was terrified. If I could have avoided that and just had a nice little office job tucked away in a corner somewhere, I probably would have still take it,
As you're right, it would have come up at some stage. I suppose if you're not dealing with something, if you're not actually acknowledging, not acknowledging it, but if you're not actually kind of working on it or trying to deal with it in some way, it's gonna come back at some stage, which is what happened to me as well. So yeah, I completely understand.
Yeah, no other regrets though, I don't think. I mean, I guess I wasn't, I fast forward to like becoming a parent, and I couldn't have changed anything, but I regret going into parenting with such a sense of like, this is going to be grand, because I just didn't give it any thought at all of this, of the challenge. I didn't know how challenging it would be, and it's not this challenging for a lot of people. It depends on your child, obviously. But I wasn't prepared for like, it plunged me back into such anxiety, being responsible for this little person. And I think I was so unaware of the reality of motherhood and parenting, and because you're sold a version of it that looks very, very appealing. And yeah, I think I obviously I don't regret my child, but like, I feel like I was just kind of getting back on my feet, and then I became a parent straight away, and that kind of pulled me back into, I could have done with like another year of two or two of finally having felt like on solid ground and like catching up on some of the life experiences that I missed out on. So yeah, a curveball that I like threw myself but didn't know the impact of.
I've heard you saying before, and it made me kind of chuckle. It probably did, obviously didn't make you chuckle at the time, but you were talking about like triggers and at the time, and one of them was moving from the north side to the south side of Dublin. It just made me laugh. It's like I kind of relate to that a little bit, but yeah, I thought that was funny. Anyone from Dublin could probably understand that.
Yeah, I think you probably only understand if you're from Dublin. But like, first of all, they feel worlds apart in some ways. And second of all, that's just a sign of how far gone I was, how out of touch with reality I'd become, and how desperate I was for there to be something I could explain. Because I was like, maybe it's that. Like, I actually thought it was the tap water that was different in the south side of the city that was making my tummy sick. That's what I really, really believed. And like, it's so funny now, but like, I was just clinging on to anything that I could try and make sense of it with, anything that would make me feel less like it's just you and it's your fault.
That's a good point, actually. I must actually mention that to someone later on about the tap water. They'll have a good laugh about
North side
that.
for life, anyway. I'm back here now.
You're back on the north side, yeah. You can't take the north side out of the person, I suppose.
No.
But I wanted to. So you mentioned Nona earlier on. So obviously, you did the book, and the book came before the podcast. But how did the book like? How did you just start writing, or was it something you wanted to do, or is it just because the reason I ask is like, so I started a blog, but I didn't mean to start as I just wanted to write stuff down to get it out of my head, and that kind of went from one thing to another. Is that how you started, or did you want to do something like that?
I didn't have any ambitions around a book at all, but I was writing. I was working in an image magazine, and I was writing like content constantly. And that's been writing was what I was doing in my previous job, as well. And I went freelance after I felt like I was kind of back on 2 feet, and I was just, you just write what you know. And I was like, I feel like there's a lot that I can write and say about this experience because I'm going through it, or I feel like there's a lot of people being misled or being preyed upon. And it's, people are so vulnerable in this position, and there's an awful lot of bullshit out there. So I felt like I could, there was a lot of content in me, or even just not even like in content is the wrong word, but I just felt passionate about anyone else finding me, or me being able to say if I can help you in some way, because that just helps you. It helps me process things to be able to like make something good of it or make it practical. And I just was writing some, I was writing for the Irish Times Health Supplement at the time. I was writing a couple of different articles, and I wrote a very step-by-step practical piece of like, if you find yourself bowled over with anxiety, start here. And it's like ruling out the physical stuff, getting a sense of what's going on for you physically before you address the emotional stuff, because oftentimes people have like an underlying thyroid issue that can show up as massive anxiety, and there's no point in spending hundreds of euro on therapy and different things if there's something medical that you're not addressing, because you don't, you have to. So coming at it, like I said at the beginning, from both sides, what, how to frame anxiety in your mind, what to think of it, what not to think about, like the best kinds of therapies, what can help. And it was just very, very like almost like a roadmap for anxiety. And then the publishers, who I ended up working with, came across the article and thought that between that, the success of that piece and my story, there could be a book in it. But I wasn't like looking for it. I wasn't expecting it at all. But it was probably like the easiest thing I'd ever written, because I just, it's all there. Like it was so much harder to come back and write another book and another one after that, because I was like, the same like second album syndrome. It's all in there, that, your first story is all in there. Now I feel at this stage like I would love to do like an updated version, because there's so much in it that I have learned so much since then from the podcast, and I've talked to so many different like world-renowned experts, that there's a lot of things I would probably update, and I'd love to do that. So we'll see. But people still reference it a lot and go back to it a lot. It did really, really well, and like I'm so grateful for it. I did not expect it at all. When the publishers called me to say like it's number one, and they called me every week for 16 weeks to say it's still number one, I
I
was
know, it's
like,
amazing.
what? I think it was just good timing. Not to like discredit myself, but it was at a time, it was 2017, 16, 17, when the sheen of social media was starting to like wear off, and we were starting to want a little bit more of like reality, and people were really struggling keeping up appearances. And so it was just, just the timing was right to start to have these conversations. And sure, but now like there's 10 a penny anxiety, mental health discussions being had, and it's important. That's, we need to be here. But I think our experience of anxiety, unfortunately, is like not really going away.
No, and the thing is, you
Collectively,
meant,
of it.
yeah, I agree with you. I think you said about the social media, and like I think it just makes things worse. Obviously, social media can be amazing, but it can be quite triggering for a lot of people as well. You mentioned obviously, kind of wanting to understand things. Did you find, because I know I do, when it comes to the body dysmorphia and stuff and even anxiety, education is big for me as an understanding it. Obviously, to write the book and the podcast you do, like obviously education is quite big. But do you find like kind of educating yourself on it and writing about it then, would it be therapeutic for you? I presume it is.
Oh, absolutely. Like I'm very much like a problem solver, like solution focused. So like even with my son now, like I'm diving into anything I can read to help me better understand it. And I suppose having the task of trying to distill a lot of the jargon and this sort of kind of overwhelming sciencey talk into something that would have made a difference for me and will make it easier for someone else. It's incredibly therapeutic. It's why I do my Substack now. Like I because I don't have time to get to actual therapy, but sitting down and writing my Substack essay every week is the most cathartic thing I do. And I built a little community there, and it's slowly growing, and it's very kind and safe space, and there's no trolls. Well, there might be, but like they have to pay, so I'll happily take their money if they want to come and see what I'm talking about. But it's an absolute, like, writing about it for me, and I think it's not just a case of like, oh, I want to help other people with this. It's also me saying, does anyone else feel this way? Because I'm looking to validate myself.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm looking for reassurance that it's okay that I feel this way. I'm looking for someone else to say, yeah, that makes sense. Because for so long it was like, what's wrong with her? Like, what is wrong with her?
I'm just
And
nodding away
that
here because I
is
can
such
completely
an
relate.
important. Yeah, that's just such an important. I know we're not supposed to look for validation outside of ourselves, but like, we're social beings. We can't detach ourselves from our needs socially. Our needs to be understood and seen and heard and like felt like it's okay. And this need we have to feel normal, for lack of a better word. So it's yeah, writing has given me that coping mechanism, and talking, I suppose.
Well, I was going to say about the talking. I said earlier on about I found your podcast in 2016. I obviously didn't. If the book was only 20, I've obviously got my
Well,
time.
the book was 2017,
Okay,
I
so the
think.
so
And I
it's
think the podcast started in the January 2019. Oh no,
okay.
sorry, 2018. I'm not sure. I can't remember. But yeah, so it's probably a little gap there.
Yeah, I'll have to go back and check my timelines, but I do remember listening to it at the beginning of things anyway. But how did the podcast come? Did you want to do the podcast?
It just felt like this is again, even though it's only a few years ago, like when there wasn't every single person had a podcast then at all. It was very new over here anyway. It was a very barren landscape, and no one had even said it to me. I just thought that I had been trying to. I think I'd been making some videos on YouTube, which I never pursued, and it was just they were like just me just speaking to my FaceTime camera. I just thought the nature of anxiety sometimes, if it'll help if people are out for a walk or something to absorb information. And I thought I could just tell my story in a different format, and I did not expect it to take off the way it did. I thought I'd get a couple of episodes out of it, maybe a season. I did not think I'd still like. I honestly, every now and then, I'm like, "How is this still going?" Like, I don't know what I'm going to talk about next. I've spoken to every expert in the world. Like, why do people still care? And people who listen to it will listen to every episode because they just want to hoover up that content. There's a sense of urgency with anxiety and mental health. It's not like, oh, is that person my cup of tea? It's like, I need to understand how this part of the brain works or whatever. So it was a no-brainer, but I didn't go into it thinking that. Then it became one of the biggest parts of my career, and like my biggest earner, which is great because it means I can keep doing it.
I mean, it's massive. It really is. I mean, I think at the be maybe you still do it, but I think at the beginning, the podcast, the episodes were just you talking. You weren't interviewing anyone or really chatting to anyone. It was just yourself, just talking.
That was the first one or two episodes, I think, because I was just trying to just tell my story. And then I think at episode two or three, I started bringing in guests. But every season I do, like, I'll do a solo episode or two, usually because I can't get someone or something has fallen through and I need to get an episode out. But those ones actually do really, really well. Just me talking through something or updating, kind of like just like audio blog type of situation. I always think that they're just going to be like filler, and they tend to do quite well.
People keep saying to me to do a solo one, and I just keep putting it off. I will do one eventually. I don't
You
know.
should do, and just like start from the beginning of your story and even write it out as a script first, and then,
Well, I've done it
like,
in blogs, and I've done God knows how many interviews like you have. I mean, it's I kind of nearly have the script already there, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I probably really should actually, because I mean, as you know yourself, your story is always changing, it's always
Yeah.
evolving. So, it's not like it's ever gonna go stale or anything like that. You know what I mean? It's always gonna like you probably could exactly what you're saying. You could probably do one every now and again, and it's not gonna be the same anyway.
No, sure. Like, yeah, like you say, like it's you're always coming at it from a different, like my solo episodes recently have been like, this is where I'm at the moment. This is what I'm going through with my son, or this now I'm having this kind of thing. And it's not always like catastrophic anxiety, but it's the daily anxieties that we're all carrying, whether it's social comparison or burnout or worries about what's happening in the world. And that's such a huge thing that people overlook in terms of their own resilience. It's like, well, it's not happening to me, but it's if you are a concerned person, which I hope you are, it will, it does impact our nervous system to see other people be harmed. And that's another kind of reason for collective anxiety at the moment, which is important to talk about as well. There's a context there. Your own circumstances are always set against the backdrop of the wider society and what's happening. And like, unless you've successfully managed to live under a rock and you've got no empathy, you're going to feel the brunt of everything that's happening at a wider level as well, I think.
Yeah, that's a good point actually. But and actually, just as you say that, because I was going to ask you something else, but I want your other book, which is like about fear of failure and stuff. Was that something that was, because I was kind of, when I started listening to your podcast, that was a lot for me, as in the, I know you haven't done the book, but the fear of failure was a massive anxiety trigger for me. Obviously, it goes back further than that, but I mean, that was a massive trigger for me. How did that come about, writing about fear of failure? Was it just a natural kind of progression?
Yeah, it was just kind of mirroring where I was at with so the first book came out, and then I was like, right, we need to do a second book. And I was like, okay. And I realized that the first book was me getting from like really suffering to just being okay in the world. And now I was okay in the world, and I wanted to kind of, go a step further and actually thrive and enjoy. And like, I was asked to come and give all these talks and do go on TV and radio. And I was like, there was a real Now I had to work on confidence. It's like I was starting from scratch on confidence and fear of failure. And it's just such a widely experienced source of anxiety for people that holds them back, that it was just interesting for me, even just as a journalist, to kind of tease apart and understand. I loved getting into the mechanics of failure and fear. What is fear? What is the fear of failure? Like competence versus confidence. Like all these different things, courage versus bravery, all these different things, which is like we all these interchangeable terms that we throw around, we don't really understand. And then also as like in form with the first book, I wanted to offer really practical tools that I turn to that maybe people don't think of. And sometimes it's leaning into the fear in a roundabout way instead of trying to go the opposite way. And that did really well as well. That was a bestseller. And so there's like a 13-part toolkit in there. But you know what? I feel like even doing interviews to this day and like talking about my books, I feel like they're so old now, and I feel like I need to do another one because I kind of feel like I'm hanging on, like I'm latching on to something that's great. You wrote a few books years ago. Like, what are you
That
doing now?
would be silly. But like, what would the third
But I
one
did a
be?
third book.
Oh, we have
The
a third
third
one,
book.
didn't we?
Yeah, I have a third book, and it's all about vulnerability. But it came out
Oh.
in COVID. It was delayed, and then it came out in COVID. This is it here, and I don't like the cover at all.
I
Because I
didn't know
didn't
you
get to
turned.
decide it. Oh, naked,
Oh,
10 truths to change your life.
okay.
I think it's probably my best writing in a book, but it fell through the cracks because of COVID, and there was no bookshops open, there was no launch, there was no like barely any publicity. Everything I did was like from home, and it was just terrible timing. I'm able to separate myself from it, and I don't think it's just because it's shit that it didn't do great. But yeah, it's just a bit of a shame because it's just kind of lost to the ether now.
That's a shame. So what's it actually like about? So what is so if that's isn't that's another progression then on, is it, or did you take a completely
Yeah,
different
it's
angle
about
on that one?
yeah, it's slightly different. It's about the power of vulnerability and how vulnerability is a thing that we really all fear, but it's the thing we all have in common and how to harness that. And there's just a series, like I broke it up into a series of kind of truths that we can explore, like about people not liking you, or about I can't even bloody remember what's in it. It's just kind of setting out some things to remember, like you can do anything but not everything, and like kind of rejecting a lot of the popular discourse around like we can do it all. It's like, well, actually, if you can't, well, you can, but you're gonna make yourself struggle mentally, and
Yeah.
then do you want that? Or you know, this obsession that society has with like an end goal, and how like I don't have an end goal, and so just lots of things that I felt like I've got a series of essays, I suppose.
Yeah.
But I think if I do another one now, like I'm definitely circulating, as toying with ideas around, it'll have to be in the kind of parenting space, I think, because that's the
Yeah.
most, that's what people are following me for now, I think, for
Okay.
my see around that. And being able to say the things that people are maybe afraid to say but are feeling,
Yeah.
because I just can't live in a world where I pretend like it's all rosy when, you know, it's not.
I
So,
know. But it's funny, like the three books you've done tie into that as well. I mean, obviously people get massive amounts of anxiety from being a parent. I am one myself. You can like a fear of failure, a lot of people probably tie it to work and career. It's not, obviously, it's fear of failure of being a parent or a child or whatever. And then the vulnerability is exactly the same. I mean, so like I think the three books you've done tie into parenting as well anyway.
I just
So
need
if
to repackage them and be like a guide for parents, but they were all written before I became one, and now, oh my God, like the
it's
difference.
irrelevant.
But like what I've learned now, but I do feel like what you mentioned, the fear of failure, like I have never felt like a failure in any other capacity as much as I can feel like as a parent. And I really feel like I find it so hard not to blame myself for my son's struggles, that I went wrong somewhere, or I failed to hold boundaries, I'm too soft, or you know, I am the reason that it's we're struggling. And you know, a lot of that anger and emotion is, you feel it's actually directed back at you, at yourself, and
Yeah.
wanting to get it right as a parent, and how like hard that is when we don't have a manual, and all kids are so different, and they all, like we said, have that different window of tolerance.
Yeah.
But
Yeah.
it's the role with the most fear of failure, and the most like social comparison, and like it's kind of the pinnacle, really, because it's you're responsible for a person's life, you know.
Yeah, and as we were saying earlier, I don't know if I said it when we were recording or before, but as we were talking about, like I feel very similar to you about if you feel responsible or that it's, you're too hard on yourself because you blame yourself, or is it, you just kind of nitpick at yourself then, and that can be quite triggering for your anxiety as well. So I could completely relate to what you're saying. I get it. So you'll have four or five more kids then, yeah.
I actually just was in a taxi yesterday, and the man just couldn't understand why I only had one, and like I'd have to have the second one now, and like, and I was like, I don't really know if we're going to, but we're quite content as we are. Like it's been, you know, it's been a lot, and he's just looked at me like, what? He was disgusted, and it's so funny, because most people I think just say, oh yeah, you know, maybe in the future, and I'm like, no, we don't. It's not that we're trying and we're not getting anywhere. We just might not want to, and that's okay. That's a valid life choice as well.
You're back on the north side, so you can bring them up as Northsiders, so you'd be fine. Well, we've been going for about an hour here. I think we've probably covered enough. I think I've probably kept you for long enough. Obviously, we've talked about anxiety in your books and stuff and your podcast. Is there anything you want to mention before we go? Because I always like to just kind of offer up a bit of a space for, the
Oh,
guests
thank
to
you.
share anything.
Moving away from trying to move away from this idea of like praising people for being quiet about their struggles, and like catching yourself for that, like, oh, isn't she so, you know, she's such a trooper. We have to be careful of that, because that can, I feed people, that can feed into the idea of like it being a badge of honor to suffer in silence. And I think, you know, and people, when they do share, say, oh, sorry for moaning. It's like, again, it's
Yeah.
like not moaning, it's you're, we have to speak about things. And so just to kind of watch and catch that behavior, and you know, if a friend does say something and is like, oh, I'm having this hard time, just be like, that sounds really tough, I hear you, instead of just trying to be like, well, it could be the it could be worse, or you know, trying to give them a solution when they probably, that's not what they're looking for. That's kind of what I'm needing at the moment anyway, is just to be heard.
That's what a lot of people want, isn't it? Just to feel like you're being heard and seen and understood. It's so important, isn't it?
And then I feel like when people say like, oh, you're such a trooper, like to other people, and I always get a bit like, am I not a trooper because I say that I'm having a hard time? Do you know, like, so I just I
Get
think it's a societal glitch there that we need to like
it.
iron out, because it's just perpetuating this idea of like not talking about how you're really feeling, and it being so much more socially admirable or socially acceptable to always just have this kind of pleasant, everything is fine exterior. And that's why we're here in the first place.
I know. You just reminded me of something there that I just say a lot, or I don't say it, but a lot of people would say to me, it's like, I don't know how you feel about this. I did say, you're so brave. You're so brave. That kind of, I know they mean well, but that kind of, yeah, I know. Yeah, just looking at your
That
face.
implies that there's a social price to pay or implication for you having talking about it, but like, no, it's not. I know people say that to me all the time as well, and I always, I'm like, I don't feel, it's not requiring bravery of me to talk about this.
Yeah, I know. I know exactly.
They mean well. They mean well.
But look, that's exactly it. No, I'm not having a go. I'm just meaning, like, as in how it kind of makes you feel yourself. You're kind of like,
Yeah, of course, yeah.
look, people probably already know where you are and where to find you. I don't mean your address. We're not going to give that out today, but I mean your socks are
Well,
so
they know I'm on the north side.
well, it kind of narrows it down a little bit. Do you want to give your socials a plug or
Yes, so
just?
I'm at Caroline Foran on Instagram. Very unexciting handle name there. And then I would love to direct people, if they like what I have to say, to my Substack, which is carolineforan.substack.com/subscribe. And there's lots of, well, what I consider writing worth reading there around a lot of what we've just talked about,
Yeah, that's
especially
basically your
parenting.
blog, isn't it? Yeah, brilliant. Okay. Caroline, thank you so much. Hopefully, as we said a few minutes ago, about just having a conversation and chatting and just kind of, keeping the conversation moving a little bit. Hopefully, people have kind of just been able to listen to a male and a female and just realize that doesn't really, like, anxiety and mental health, it's not gender bound, it's not age, it's not sex, not anything. It's like, it is what it is, and it can affect everyone.
Yeah, well, thank you for speaking up about it, because there's not enough men doing that. So I mean, maybe in a weird way, it is brave for you, because most men are frightened to admit their vulnerability. And I so thank you for doing that, because I know for a fact, like, it's not. I get as many DMs from men as I do women, but it's interesting. Women will tag me publicly and say, "Love this episode." A man will privately message me and say, "My girlfriend sent on this episode. I found it really helpful." And so there's such a different way in how they interact with it.
I get that too. I get that too, actually. And a lot of men kind of prefer to remain anonymous as well, which is fine. But yeah, look, I don't mind. I mean, the floodgates have opened at this stage. I don't mind being the voice for, I suppose, men who feel they can't talk, and as long as they can talk in private and find someone they trust, no one's, everyone's just doing their best. But anyway, Carolyn, thank you so much for chatting me today. I really do appreciate it. And look, I'll let you get back to
I'm
your
actually
parenting.
going into town later to get my third tattoo. So,
Oh, hang on, this podcast isn't over at all. I just thought it was a third one.
I only got these done last November. This is like me taking back control after years of feeling like I wasn't able to control things in my life. And so it's very much linked to anxiety, I suppose. But I have a tattoo there. I don't know if you can see it, of my mom's handwriting saying "love you" in her handwriting. And then I have a moon here. That's my son's birth flower, and I'm getting a flower on my shoulder blade later on. And I find it very relaxing and empowering. And my dad is like, "It's going to be heroin next, and you'll never get a job, blah, blah, blah." And I'm like, "Relax, I'm nearly 36. I'm
Well, that's
fine."
not dramatic at all.
I
Jesus Christ.
know. So, yeah, it's my little way of being like, no, I am the master of my own body and mind and decisions. And
I've exactly the same. I've no tattoos, and I was exactly the same as you about feeling like taking back control. And I haven't got one, but I was thinking about getting one. Don't know why I'm showing you. There's nothing there, but like just
ew.
like a tattoo just there, maybe the kids' names or something. I've been kind of contemplating that recently. So
It's a really
yeah.
nice reminder. I mean, I forget that they're there, but it's a really nice reminder of, yeah, I guess, your own power, which is nice
Yeah.
when a mental health makes you feel can make you feel very powerless. So
There you go. Right, let's go.
okay, I'll say goodbye again.
Sorry. That's goodbye again. Well, guys, thanks so much, Caroline,
Okay.
again for chatting to me. And I'll be back very soon, obviously, with another episode of the Endless Spiral podcast. See you later. Bye, Caroline.
Thanks, Keith.
Bye.
Bye.